Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I talk to you!
On Talk Radio.
This mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Do you ever get the feeling that we are lurching from one crisis to another? Did you ever think that people would be so badly represented in Parliament and the government? Do you ever feel like just emigrating to get away from it all? This morning we are greeted with a collection of stories that if you were to be of a nervous disposition might be enough to drive you to drink. And that's got nothing to do with the fact that we opened the show with a cocktail. First up, we've got the Cabinet sacking scandal. Private Pike, Gavin Williamson has sworn on his own children that he is not guilty of leaking the news about Theresa May's Huawei deal. She says they have compelling evidence that Gav is guilty of sin, and he has admitted to having an 11-minute telephone conversation with the journalist from the Daily Telegraph, who broke the story. I'm still largely underwhelmed by the divulging of this information, but it is starting to look like a bit of a stitch-up. We'll talk to Nick Dubois, a former Tory MP, a former special advisor, of course, to Dominic Raab as well, to find out what goes on inside those hallowed halls of government. Meanwhile, Lord Deben, formerly known as John Selwyn Gummer, you know, the bloke who force-fed his own daughter a hamburger in the midst of the mad cow disease scare, he wants us all to change our lives to save the world. No more flying about, no more eating red meat, no more driving in lorries that are powered by anything other than hydrogen. This guy has been a public servant for nearly 50 years, and I would say we have paid him in excess of £5 to £10 million over those years. Who on earth does he think he is telling us what to do? 0344 499 1000. Then, of course, there's Fiona Onasanya, the criminal MP who looks to have finally come to the end of the taxpayer-funded gravy train. But will the soon-to-be former Peterborough MP get a payoff? A lot of people are asking that question. We'll find out. 0344 499 1000. Throughout the show today, we're also looking for what your funeral song would be, because a new report has come out saying, rather disappointingly, that My Way, not Huawei, is apparently the big number one for everybody who wants to go to their grave. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, don't think we're just having fun here on Talk Radio, because we're also asking you for what your favourite funeral song would be should you pass on, because it turns out that for the first time in the history of funerals, no hymns are included in the top 10 songs that people ask for when they are going to meet their maker, whether it's by cremation or whether it's by burial. And apparently number one is My Way. We've had a couple of good tweets, actually. One from a guy who said, I wouldn't mind having My Way as long as it was the Sid Vicious version. But of course, you can't play that one on the radio because it's a little bit dirty. Let's talk to Stuart Weir instead, who's our friend up in Scotland, a man who knows from sitting right in the middle of a climate emergency. We'll find out whether he's decided to take any action. Stuart, a very good morning to you.
Yeah, hi, mate. I was just playing my funeral there, and I think I'll have Highway to Hell.
A couple of people have mentioned those, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. You know, but judging by the lot from Extinction Rebellion, we're all going to be passing over pretty soon to the other side because the world's all going to come to an end. I mean, this report has really wound me up this morning, right? The UK must reduce its greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by 2050. Now, I'm not even sure I understand what net zero means, but it seems to involve very little flying, very little driving, very little eating, and very little use of any kind of fuel of any kind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know quite a few people within the farming community, and you every now and again, you might be at a drinks party or an evening out, and someone will start telling them about how much methane their livestock produces.
Yes.
Now, okay, the person who's actually telling them is producing methane as well just by telling them. But the fact of the matter is, these guys are actually quite self-conscious about what they're trying to do for the environment for two reasons.
Yeah.
One, they want to still sell meat. And secondly, they know that the cattle actually has an impact on the environment. So they feed them supplements of the likes of ginger and one or two other things to actually cut down on the methane.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a great many people. I mean, I myself, I've gone from running a V8 down to a V6 twin turbo.
Very good. Even you're making sacrifices. But I mean, some of this stuff is nonsensical, right? They now want to plant millions and millions of new trees in an area the size of Yorkshire. Now, there's loads of space up in Scotland. I suppose they could do it up there, but there's no mention of who's gonna plant all this stuff. Where are they going to get the money from? Lorries will need to be powered by hydrogen. Gas power stations will go and be replaced by hydrogen power. I mean, who's paying for all this?
Yeah, I heard the report to say that they basically need to plant enough trees it would cover the size of an area the size of Wales.
Yeah.
So why not just go to Wales and plant trees there? You know, I mean, listen, we hear this every now and again that people want to do this and do that and do the next thing. But the fact of the matter is, and unless you're actually planning to do this on a global basis, or have other nations, for instance, the Chinese and the Americans, actually adhering to these rules,
right,
it doesn't make a great deal of difference.
Well, of course it doesn't. No, you know, I mean,
what you end up doing is you end up having areas or like hot spots throughout the world, quite literally hot spots, that people basically turn a blind eye to these things. And meanwhile, you're living almost a monastic existence.
Right.
Because you don't go any holidays, you don't eat what you like, you can't drive the cars that you like, all because somewhere out in the world won't actually take it on board that there is a problem or there is an issue.
I mean, look at this. The UK will need to stop using oil, gas and coal. Why? I mean,
Well, we've already stopped using coal. I think last week was the first time since the Industrial Revolution that we stopped using coal for 5 consecutive days, even during miners' strikes.
Yes.
But again, you know, gas, you know, people will say, well, I've cut down on my electricity bill, I've turned down my gas bill and all the rest of it. But you cannot stop using it. You're still using it. And even the most basic and fundamental you know, industries or basically fundamental parts of the infrastructure still need electricity and still need gas.
Yeah.
You cannot switch everything off.
Well, it says also, how about this one? You'll like this one up in the frozen north, right? Consumers should set their thermostats to no more than 19 degrees. Oh, how terribly middle class. What if you don't have a thermostat? I mean, you know, I don't have a thermostat. I don't measure the heat. I've got one in my flat in London. I've got one storage heater that I put on from time to time when it gets a bit cold. But, you know, I'm not using a lot of electricity, but I would be banned from doing that, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the big thing in all of this is, mate, there is no joined-up thinking, because what you'll have is...
You're no thinking at all.
Exactly. There are people who are saying, you know, oh, you drive your car into the city. Mm. That's because come 11:30 at night, there are no trains to where I live.
Yes.
And, you know, and this, you know, I during the
Commonwealth... Well, you shouldn't be going out. You should go home earlier, Stuart. You know.
Well, tell the pubs to shut earlier. During the Commonwealth Games, there was a real bit of sleight of hand and trickery going on. And all these people throughout the Commonwealth will all go home to, you know, to Canada, to Australia, to various parts in Africa, thinking that Glasgow's a happening place because the trains run until 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. And as soon as the flame went out at the Commonwealth Games, the trains stopped running.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've just heard today that the old tube workers are going on strike FA Cup weekend, which is very nice of them. So there'll be no trains at all for the Wolverhampton Wanderers fans and Man United fans to get to Wembley. Fantastic. But what about this Lord Deben guy, right? You're old enough to remember the Selwyn Gummer incident. I mean, this is a guy, right, who was so brazen and disregarding of his child's health and welfare that he actually used her for a political stunt. Now, forget the fact for the moment that he fed her a hamburger and made her eat it in front of a camera. I mean, just putting your daughter through anything like that, not because of the hamburger, but just because it's a brazen and ghastly attempt at publicity for your own political career, is a shocking thing to do. And the fact that he's now telling us, after having shoved a hamburger into his daughter's mouth, we shouldn't eat red meat now. I mean, you know, we'll talk about flip flopping on the issues.
I actually think, Mike, that particular photo stunt or photo opportunity was actually something expanded upon in Little Britain.
Yes.
When they had the family,
it was.
the family at the garden gate saying everything's fine.
Yes.
Except that poor child was made to eat a burger. She's probably vegan now or vegetarian at least, because the world's media were focusing in on her eating a burger. No, listen.
Well, do you know, doing a bit of research on this story this morning, bizarrely, it turns out that one of her friends later on died of mad cow disease.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is incredible, you know?
Listen. Sometimes you write things. I mean, there's the old running newspapers about write the headline and the story will take place. Will take care of itself.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of that. But I mean, John Selwyn Gummer, as you rightly point out, he is a professional politician.
Yeah.
And even when people have tried to get rid of him, he's popped up again in another quango. Mm. You know, telling us what we should be doing. I ain't listening to this guy. I dare say a great many people are not listening to him either, because if you took his mantra or his menu for living your life in the future, you wouldn't have a life to live. And I'm sorry, I'm not here that long on this planet, and I intend to live it to the full.
Well, quite.
So I won't be following your guidelines.
It might not come as any great surprise to you either that, having checked him out as well, in addition to being the head of the Committee on Climate Change in the House of Lords, right? Guess what? He also chairs the sustainability consultancy known as Sandcroft International. He also has a role with a recycling company called Valpak. He also has a job at Globe International, which is the global legislating organisation for a balanced environment. You know, the list goes on and on. So this guy's getting very rich, and so are lots of other people, off the back of this kind of new environmentalism.
But this is not just another person who's been put in a position because... Let's have a look at his CV.
Yeah.
Look at all the boxes he ticks.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily need to be the right boxes, as long as he ticks enough boxes that confuses people about the real issues.
Right.
And this is just a classic example of somebody, you know, getting probably paid and weighed in for a really big salary, telling everyone else and pontificating how everyone else should live their lives while still taking a bonus here and there for doing everything wrong.
Mm. Now, the problem for you as well in this report is that it says that Scotland specifically can reach the zero emissions target by 2045, sooner than the supposed recommended date of 2050. Now, you and I both most likely are not going to be around at that time.
Well, listen, I do wonder where Scotland will Scotland be an independent nation?
We'll still be trying to leave the EU, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, Scotland, what currency will we have? Will we have adopted? Will we still be using pounds
groats.
Or euros? Or
they love groats.
The introduction of the cranky.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want five Jeanette crankies to the pound.
Right.
No, I mean, all these things... Again, I wish people well, but until such times as you have an integrated transport system, which means that buses and trains, you know, I'll give you an example. The bus that would take me home if I got off at a certain station leaves 5 minutes before the train actually arrives in the station.
Right.
Now, until such times as people can actually decide to actually run all of these things in time, like say they can do in Italy or Germany, you know, I won't be buying into this one, because basically I cannot exist and I cannot perform as a working journalist by relying on public transport. And apart from that,
well, of course you can't. Well, it doesn't go anywhere. I mean, outside of most major cities, you can't use public transport to do anything. And what about this, right? Avoid flying, especially long haul. I've got a son in Los Angeles. I've got a mother and a sister in New York. I've got a daughter in Dubai. What am I supposed to just never see them? You know, no, don't worry, I'll just never see... Cheerio.
Actually, they might actually think this is a fantastic policy.
Very harsh. Listen, they ring me when they need something,
true.
I can tell you. But, you know, it's completely impractical, all of it. And the thing that absolutely sort of banjaxes me, if you like, is that why is it we're taking all this rubbish seriously? You know, these are, you know, supposedly intelligent politicians. They're supposed to be, you know, not living in some kind of medieval flat earth society. And yet they believe that we can do all these things and our lives won't be affected.
I use the phrase monastic existence earlier on there. I mean, I think too many people have been watching Game of Thrones and think to themselves, see, it could work.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and again, until the Chinese stop opening power stations and alarming, or coal-fired power stations, an alarming rate of something like one every week, And then I think they're actually preaching to the wrong people.
Yeah.
I mean, I do what I do today because, believe it or not, because the coal industry is no longer there. And in some respects, I'm thankful. In other respects, I'm thinking, why did we go through the pain and misery? Because somebody came up with a good idea back then that obviously hasn't ever been implemented since then.
And the thing about coal as well, because I once moved into a house in Wiltshire, right, and discovered, much to my joy, an entire coal bunker around the back of the house, which was full of coal, right? Now, I'd never really... I think we used to have a fireplace when I was a kid, when very young, but I didn't remember it very well. And I started burning this coal in the fireplace, and it was so... It was brilliant. It's the best thing I've ever seen to heat a house.
I bet the small children up the chimney and get afraid of that, Nick.
My kids didn't mind doing that once in every couple of weeks. It was fine, you know.
But that's the thing, in all seriousness, mate. If you burn coal, nothing gives off heat.
No,
like coal.
It's amazing.
It's utterly amazing, and I completely get what they're doing. I mean, back when I took a job in engineering, I was told, "Don't worry, son, you'll have a job for 300 years
right.
because of all the coal." I think that was slightly optimistic.
It was a bit,
It was a bit
like when I told you how long you'd have that job at the Mirror.
And I thought that was just realism. Listen, it was. But the thing was, back then I was told that much the same as being told that we'll have absolutely a carbon footprint of absolute zero by such and such a date.
Right.
Once you've heard enough of these mantras and slogans and mottos and the likes, you start to disbelieve almost immediately because you know the practicalities are that they never make them work.
No. Well, how about this? I mean, these are people who can't even make leaving the European Union work. They can't even make the trains work now, right? They can't make a ferry work. They can't actually cancel a contract without paying out bucket loads of money. How about this? This is my favourite one. Carbon capture and storage technology. Machines able to suck carbon dioxide out of the air at a large scale will be needed. Well, surely if you've got a machine that can suck carbon dioxide out of the air, you don't need to stop burning carbon, do you?
And they're not called trees.
Well, you're going to plant a few billion of them, you know.
The thing I like are the motorsport teams who globetrot around the planet with stickers on their car saying "Save the environment, we're green this, we're green that, we've got no carbon footprint," jetting all over the world, and then basically have an accountant doing up the sums to prove that actually they could fly from Birmingham to Australia, and the planet wasn't damaged in any way, shape, or form because they've saved up enough carbon brownie points to justify the trip. Utter rubbish.
I know.
You know, so you're either in a business or an industry to do certain things and make certain things work, or you're not. And a great many people would rather that we don't have very much industry in this country anyway, but one industry we do have is power generation. And I think there's some people that have actually been lying out under the sun for far too long.
No, I think you're absolutely right. They've obviously got some kind of damage going on. Stuart, thank you very much indeed. A very entertaining conversation with Stuart Weir. But this is a serious matter. I don't want you all to joke about it. This is ludicrous. It is crazy and it is mad. And worse than that, it's being run by this guy who's shifted at least £5 million out of the public purse in his career as a politician. First in the House of Commons and now in the House of Lords. John Selwyn Gummer, a man who wants to tell us how we should live. I want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's go to the phones before we do anything else, because coming up a little bit later on, we'll be playing some more funeral music. Not really funeral music or funereal music, but music that you would like to have played at your funeral. Had some great suggestions going through the whole show today, and we've been playing quite a lot of different tunes, so we'll play some more coming up very shortly. Let's go to the phones though and talk to David first, who's in Manchester. Hi, David.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Good. What do you want to say?
Well, I haven't spoken to you for a long time.
No, but, I remember you well. What do you want to tell us?
It's a reference to John Selwyn Gummer.
Yeah.
And it was an exchange in Parliament, which was, and the reference was that being attacked by John Selwyn Gummer was like being savaged by
yes.
dead sheep.
I remember that, yeah. Was it Nigel Lawson?
It was either Nigel Wilson or
Geoffrey Howe. I think it might have been Geoffrey Howe, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite... I mean, in those days, you had some very substantial people in Parliament. And I know that it's easy to say, you know, the good old days were better than they are now. But it seems as though we don't have anyone like that in Parliament anymore.
No, there were some pretty bad Tories.
Yeah, well, there certainly are. Absolutely right. David, thanks very much indeed. I do remember... I mean, if you remember that period of time in politics, it was a very kind of... wavy and strange time, because John Major, of course, was kind of the de facto recipient of Margaret Thatcher's legacy, and he kind of ruined it and spoiled it, but had a couple of opportunities because he didn't ruin it and spoil it quite enough so that he still managed to win the election in 1992 when everybody thought he would lose it. Let's go to John, though, who is in Spain. Hello, John.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
You're the last bastion of common sense, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's starting to feel like the ever-decreasing iceberg, I have to say.
Well, the whole media, I mean, I don't know, and I think many people know, but I don't think the environmental scientists know, because I don't know if you looked at 30 years back, that United Nations speech. They were predicting the gloom in the year 2000. The Maldives would be underwater. Bangladesh, yeah. 20% of the land would have gone. And all the other crap, which I won't bother to go into. The United Nations environments have now, yesterday, repeated a virtually word-to-word the same speech, which they've gotten totally wrong 30 years ago, and now we're expected to believe it again. I mean, I just don't know anymore, quite honestly. And to me, the fating, the media's fating of this little 16-year-old girl, I mean,
well,
what is she going to be like? Mental problems in three, when she's out of the limelight completely and completely forgotten. She's going to have mental problems.
I think there's certainly some questions that need to be asked about, you know, how she got to where she is. I mean, she was a young woman who went on all sorts of fasts. I mean, she's gone without food for months on end. You know, she's drawn attention to a cause that she obviously cares about. But there's an awful lot of questions about the people around her and how they're letting her get away with it and or encouraging her. And the idea as well, John, I'm with you. I've never trusted the United Nations. I don't think they are a credible body of any kind whatsoever. They haven't been able to do their jobs in war zones when they've had to go there and peacekeep. They've allowed some terrible things to happen. And they are by no means, for me, an authority on anything.
No, but these were the worldwide top scientists.
Yeah.
Making a speech at the United Nations. They've virtually made the same speech again 30 years later, given us 30 years to forget that they've virtually everything they predicted. I mean, they said in 30 years, which would bring us up to this date now, that the temperature would have soared by 7 degrees. Not going to be conservative. It just hasn't happened.
No, and of course not.
This poor kid, you're talking about this poor kid, and all these sycophants of politicians and all lapping up to her. I mean, she, I think she, as you know, her sister also maybe has problems.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. I'll tell you what, let me just stop you for a second, John, because we've got a clip here, I think, from Margaret Thatcher, bizarrely, talking about how population is the biggest threat to the environment. And this is in 1989 to the UN Assembly. Let's have a listen to this.
It is, of course, true that none of us would be here but for the greenhouse effect. It gives us the moist atmosphere which sustains life on Earth. We need the greenhouse effect, but only in the right proportions. More than anything, our environment is threatened by the sheer numbers of people and the plants and animals which go with them. When I was born, the world's population was some 2 billion people. My grandson will grow up in a world of more than 6 billion people. Put in its bluntest form, the main threat to our environment is more and more people and their activities, the land they cultivate ever more intensively, the forests they cut down and burn, the mountainsides they lay bare, the fossil fuels they burn, the rivers and the seas they pollute. The result is that change in future is likely to be more fundamental and more widespread than anything we have known hitherto.
Now that's actually quite sensible, John, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean she's no Mrs. May, thank God.
Yeah, really. I mean, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? How we actually get
anything
done?
Yeah, I mean that seems sounds. I mean, yeah. I'm not a skeptic. It sounds sensible thing to say.
Yeah. No, but, John. Listen, I think we all agree that, you know, there are conditions in the world which are probably getting worse, which are probably not good for the environment. But what we're not going to see is the end of civilization in 7 years' time because we haven't cut our carbon emissions to zero. That's just not going to happen.
No, I must admit it's crazy. Anyway, nice to see that you're the best last.
Well, listen, I'll do my best, John. Thank you very much indeed. Fascinating listening there to Margaret Thatcher talking to the UN Assembly in 1989. Because don't forget, as John says, back then, a senior UN environmental official said that entire nations would be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend was not reversed by the year 2000. And that was like 11 years later. Of course, that didn't happen. And guess what? We're still here. The Seychelles is still there. Bangladesh is still there. Yes, it floods, but Bangladesh is always flooded. Let's talk to Ian, who's in Hounslow. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Mike.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Very well indeed. I'm not very happy with John Selwyn Gummer, though. You know.
I was going to do Penny Morden and Gary Williamson, but I'll just say a little bit about the environment.
Yeah.
It is an emergency, it's no doubt, and my fix for it is a bit controversial.
All right.
Is that the population is far too high.
Yes.
And expanding up towards the 10 billion for the planet. What we need to do is get the secret police to put a little something in the water supply to reduce the population. In other words, mildly disconnect.
Well, some kind of contraceptive scenario?
Yeah, just to drop the population. When it gets down to, say, 20 million in Britain,
uh-huh.
then reconnect it.
Well, I don't think you can reduce the population by two-thirds simply by putting something in the water.
Well, over a few years, of course.
Yes.
But that's the thing.
Well, I mean, you just heard Margaret Thatcher saying that when she was born, there were 2 billion people in the entire world. There's now, I think, 2 billion people in China, isn't there?
Yeah. If it expands and expands uncontrolled, what's going to happen is the planet will ruin itself. But I like cars as much as you do. We're not going to give up central heating, cheese, beef and cars.
I'm not going to stop flying around either.
Well, that's right. So there's got to be a fix somewhere. What I was going to say is about the Defence Secretary, number one and two,
is yes.
Gary Williamson and Penny Morden.
Yeah.
Both of them are Mickey Mouse. One should be at school, Gary Williamson. He looks like a sixth former, and he's got no gravitas. What we need is someone in that.
Well, he was known as Private Pike, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, when he was fired yesterday, I just put a tweet out, as a stupid boy.
Yeah. What we need is someone with some gravitas, like Jim Callaghan, like the old days, with big old boys, Dennis Sealy and all that. Someone who could walk in the room and they got some presence.
Yeah.
I mean, Penny Morden, she doesn't cut it either, you know.
Well, I don't think any of our current crop...
She should be at home doing the washing up and all that, you know, really.
You know, Ian, I mean, if you want to say something that is just designed to wind people up, you could do that, but it's a bit of an old trick and it's not that clever. And you know you don't really mean that.
Yeah, I know. I don't buy women in a lot of power.
You don't like women?
No, I don't mind women in power, but not at the real top jobs.
Are you married?
I mean, well, that's a personal question. I'm not going to answer that.
You're not going to answer it. Well, I was just asking. I mean,
no, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. I mean, we got a woman prime minister. That's the second. You just said one on earlier. That one.
What's wrong with that?
And then we've got a second one, Mrs. May, who's about the worst in history.
She I is, mean, but she's not the worst in history because she's a woman. She's just not very good at her job.
I think it would be much better if we have men in powerful positions.
Why?
Women should. Well, because that's the way things are.
What about David Cameron? He was a complete plonker. He's the one that got us into this mess.
It's not a system or methodology that is 100% successful. Obviously, you can have very bad leaders, male or female.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what my point is.
What do you reckon on this idea of Penny Mordaunt? Then, I mean, she really.
I think Penny Mordaunt's actually a very intelligent woman. I think she's a very decent minister. I don't necessarily think she's prime ministerial material, but I think she's as good as they've got in the cabinet. Actually, same with Amber Rudd. I quite like Amber Rudd. I think she's smart. I think she's got some good ideas. I mean, and I think she's capable.
Like, say the nation's in peril, and it's an emergency where the Russians, the Americans want to use nuclear weapons. All these systems could become an emergency. Do you really want someone like her with the responsibility to say to the nation of what to do and all that?
Somebody like her, meaning what?
Well, do you really want her? Do you really want a woman like in her place?
Well, I don't care whether she's a woman or a man. I don't think it matters.
Whether or not to use
tell me which man you think would do a better job that's currently in the cabinet.
None of them.
Right, so you don't think we should have a defence secretary at all then?
Well, obviously they've got to pick
someone. That would be a bit dodgy.
Who would you pick? I think Bill Cash, actually. I'd like him. He's got a bit of gravitas.
Who?
Bill Cash, but he's not in the cabinet.
Bill Cash, do me a favour. He's old, Ian. He's old. Don't you like old people? Do you like old people better than women?
He's got gravitas and authority about him.
Yeah, something you haven't got either of, I'm afraid. Cheerio. Ian in Hounslow, thank you very much indeed. Loads more to come. 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is Talk Radio.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
But through it all, when there was dark,
I thought we weren't going to play any of the obvious ones. This is the number one song that people want at their funeral. I've actually been to funerals where they played this for a couple of people who I was fortunate enough to know. Popular hymns, however, such as The Lord Is My Shepherd and Abide With Me, have now been completely shunted out of the top 10, instead replaced by things like You Raise Me Up by Westlife. God almighty, imagine how awful that would be. Ed Sheeran's Supermarket Flowers, which is pretty dreadful. My Way, of course. How about this from somebody? Because I've been asking you for your suggestions, and some of them have been really quite brilliant. This one from David. The Funeral March of a Marionette, a.k.a. the Alfred Hitchcock Presents theme, played as my coffin is brought into the church. Quite a lot of you have got something to say, of course, about Ian from Hounslow, which I shall read out very shortly. Not very complimentary, especially from some of our female listeners. Lionheart says, of course, if you don't want a conventional funeral, there is always Cryogenics Man, and it will be nice and cheap because he'll do it out of the goodness of his own heart. The song would be Working My Way Back to You, Babe, by the Four Seasons. That would be good. He's, of course, the famous man from the Cryogenics Society, which is not a business, you might remember. Let's talk to John Weir, who's an independent funeral director and national spokesman for the Society of Allied and Independent Funeral Directors. That's a bit of a mouthful, but John, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Very nice.
Can I just say, I was national spokesperson. I'm now a spokesperson.
Oh, right. Okay. Does that change things then? You're not national anymore. You're just what?
Well, the society's still national, but someone took over the reins.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, never mind. My condolences to you. Now, tell me, first of all, obviously, what's your funeral song going to be?
Blimey, it could well be You Raise Me Up by Westlife.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bit soppy, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you know what? I suppose it's like a plumber with a dripping tap, Mike. I don't really think about it.
I thought you might have given it some thought before you came on the show, though. I mean, I don't really think about it either, but I kind of thought this morning, how about The End by The Doors? Because it's the end, you know?
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it, that this survey is conducted every year about and how trends are changing, because popular music now is, as you said earlier in the opening piece, Mike, is way up there.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Now, that's kind of a nice one, isn't it? By Eva Cassidy, which is a beautifully sung version of that. Robbie Williams' Angels is also kind of in there. Time to Say Goodbye. Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli. I mean, what have you found, John? Have you found there is a move away from the more classical kind of hymn-type music?
Yeah, just before coming on, I just had a look at what music we've got coming up this week.
Yeah.
And I'll give you just a brief example. The Oneidan Line, Whiskey in the Jar, Mac the Knife, Nessun Dorma, Power of Love, Albatross, You to Me Are Everything, Let 'Em Come. That's the Millwall theme tune.
Right.
There is a move away. And equally, Mike,
the Oneidan Line sort of stands out in that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
That's quite old.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I remember watching it years ago.
Mm.
But in the same vein that the choice of music's changing, I think funeral directors across the UK, Mike, are seeing an increase in non-religious funerals.
Right.
So times are changing.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you whether there's any difference now in terms of how people choose to go, if you like. You know, are there more burials and more cremations? How's that moving around?
Last year in the UK, there were about 620,000 funerals. 75% of those were cremation.
Okay.
So cremation is still the most popular way of disposal.
Right, because I'm assuming, and you could correct me on this if I'm wrong, that we'll sort of run out of space, won't we, to bury people? Because disturbingly, and I don't know if the last time you and I spoke about this, I mentioned it, but I disturbingly, in Germany, when you get buried, you only get buried for a set period of time. So you kind of rent the plot, if you like. So depending on how much money you pay, you're either there for 10 years or 20 years or 50 years, and then they bury somebody else there.
Yeah, certainly in the UK, our laws would prevent that from happening, but certainly in some European countries, Portugal, they do the same.
Yeah.
Certainly, once you're buried here, you're buried, but there are some London boroughs, Mike, where they haven't got any space whatsoever.
Right.
And
what do they do then? Because presumably also, if you're getting buried and you're not having a religious-type funeral, where do you get buried?
Well, you can still be buried in corporation cemeteries, you know, cemeteries that are owned by local authorities as opposed to a churchyard.
Okay.
But at the moment, the government are looking at ways of creating more space by allowing authorities to find graves that haven't been buried in for, say, 100 years, 125 years, exhume the remains that are there, make the grave deeper and rebury those remains to allow more funerals to go on top.
Well, I understand in Germany what they do is they just kind of rake it over. They sort of dig it up again. And so the remains that were there are still kind of in the ground, if you like. But they're obviously, you know, not inside anything. And then another coffin with another body and it gets put in the ground.
Yeah.
It's quite weird, that.
Yeah, it is. And I'm certainly, as I say, our exhumation laws here would absolutely prevent that.
Right. Okay. And what about when you get cremated? I've always asked this question of people like yourself, John. If you're inside a coffin, which you've paid quite a lot of money for, because they're quite expensive, and your coffin goes through the curtains and into the fire.
Yeah.
Do you get burned inside the coffin, or do you get it, you know, taken out? What happens?
That's a good question, because there's lots of myths about it, Mike.
Yeah.
Once that coffin is received into the crematorium, it is cremated exactly as it's received. It's a criminal offence to interfere with it. So the coffins aren't taken away, the fittings aren't taken off. It's cremated exactly as is.
Right. So if it's got sort of like brass handles and things on it, do they just disappear? They get thrown out, presumably, don't they?
No, all the fittings on a cremation coffin have to be combustible.
Oh, do they? Right,
everything,
okay.
Yeah.
I see. All right, that's interesting. Because I always wondered about that. Cause so when people are carrying around the ashes of their loved one, it's actually at least half of it's made up of the coffin.
Well, a cremator cremates at about 1,000 degrees centigrade.
Yeah.
You mentioned about coffins costing a lot of money, and I say this time and time again, Mike, people haven't got to spend a phenomenal amount of money to have a simple, dignified funeral. And at the end of the day, the coffin, as we've just said, the coffin is cremated.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
When was the last time you were at a funeral?
I haven't been to that many, to be honest. A friend of mine died probably more than 10 years ago, actually, was the last one I went to. But I mean, people tell me I'm getting to the age now where I will go to more funerals than weddings, if you like.
But could you put your hand on heart, I know it was 10 years ago, and say you know what sort of coffin it was, whether it was oak, elms.
I seem to remember it was quite light coloured, so yeah. It was kind of pale wood, you know.
Because
it was in Mortlake Crematorium.
Yeah, and one of the questions I always say to people, when was the last time you were there and what sort of coffin was it?
Mm.
And many people say, oh, I don't know, or it was a light colour or a dark
yeah.
colour. They don't know whether it was a veneered coffin or solid oak. So for personally, for cremation, I'm all for simplicity
yes.
in terms of the coffin.
Well, I know other people. I mean, I didn't go to this funeral, but a friend of the mother of my children's died, sadly, very young of cancer. Mm. And she wanted to be buried in a sort of ecologically sound way. So they constructed, I think it was a coffin made out of almost like, you know, bark, tree bark or something like that.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, eco-coffins,
yeah.
bamboo, wool.
Yeah. Are they becoming more popular?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely right.
Okay.
And the trouble is, Mike, there's so much choice now, whether it's the music you have, the style of coffin you have.
Mm.
And for the best part, people are having to make decisions about something they know little, if anything, about.
Right.
At a time with anything else in life, you'd say, look, I'm sorry, mate, I can't do this.
Yeah.
If you think a wedding, it's arranged over months and months and months. A funeral, over days.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's quite terrifying for an awful lot of people. Listen, John, we've got to run. Thank you very much indeed. John Weir, independent funeral director and spokesperson, as he says, not national spokesperson, just spokesperson for the Society of Allied and Independent Funeral Directors.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.